All right, we've been talking about selection, and we got up through interviews? Did we talk about interviews?
Yeah.
Did we go past that?
No.
That was it. We talked about how we should have a panel interview, right, and that we should have pattern interviews to try to eliminate personal biases that might be inherent in the interviewer, right? So, what do I think about interviews? I think that probably the majority of companies that use interviews would probably be better off not to use them. That's my own opinion. Unless they want to modify them in the way that I suggest, then they're probably a reasonably valid selection tool, and they're fine. But in general, what I think is that A, the interviewee is trying to give socially acceptable answers, and B, the interviewers are subject to all kinds of personal biases, et cetera, and particularly the sort of people who are better socially than others in terms of group communication and the like. So I think, by and large, it's a bad deal, right, and that people shouldn't use individual interviews. But we do it because we want to see that we like the person if we're going to have to work with them, et cetera. So it's a common way of doing it, but not a way that I recommend. The next sort of set of tests that I would talk about would be what's known as job sample tests. Job sample tests are, as you might imagine, a test that includes a sample of the job. And because of that, they're at least a reasonable measure of someone's ability to do the job if you're careful to use an important, i.e. major responsibility, of that job. And since I am the number one family man, I'll tell you about our granddaughter's father, our son, right, who went, the reason she has a nanny is because he had to go to work because he didn't want to lose all his job skills while raising his daughter, which he's done for the last year and almost a half now. A year and a half of playing with her, and he loves every minute of it. But now we hire a nanny, and of course it's terrifying, but it turns out she's fine. But he goes off to work. This job that he has is with a landscape architectural firm, which he is up to his neck, a landscape architect, all the CAD-CAM designing and all that kind of stuff. So they say, well, you seem like a nice enough guy. You obviously have wonderful parents who took good care of you, et cetera, et cetera. I like them already. And they said, but we want to see how you do. So come on down here for a two-day work sample, which was a good idea, right? So he comes down, and he sits down, and he starts ripping stuff off the various plans and whatnot and doing them up a little bit better and doing renderings of this and that. They have these huge projects in Malaysia, resort areas in Malaysia and Hawaii they're doing. And there's only a couple of them, and they needed help. So, and I talked to him at the end of the day. He said, Dad, it was so easy. You could have done it. You know, easy for him, obviously, after all these years. But, so they hired. But that was a good test, I thought. First of all, they saw whether he'd get along, whether or not he was skilled at running this software. One of the major packages he helped develop, actually. So he's certainly good with software on these things. So they saw that it was a good fit, and it would work out really well, I'm sure. So that job sample is good as long as it's important aspects of doing the job, right? It's when people stretch this a little to sort of things like, well, it's important that you do, you have a good hand-eye coordination. And the hand-eye coordination tests you can get, and you can turn out whether a person can pass them, or they give you an Excel spreadsheet test to see whether you understand your way around the Excel spreadsheet and this and that. Those are all fine if they're an important component of the job. It's when they're not an important component of the job and you weed a person out because they aren't particularly good on Excel and it's a small part of the job, 5% of the job, that you're making a mistake. Because for many of these things, especially things like data manipulation, data entry, and the like, a person can learn it pretty quickly.
Do you have to pay them during these tests?
Pardon?
Do you have to pay them during these tests?
No, it's part of the selection process. I don't know if Rye got paid or not. I never even asked. He said he didn't care because it was so easy. He just sat there for 8 hours and just whatever it was he did, rendered something, I don't know. And so if you're going to do these things, make sure it's a good job sample, right, that kind of thing. The next area is an area that I'm most worried about, the psychological testing. Psychological testing and tests that are not obviously related to the job have me a little bit worried, and we're relying on them more and more, it seems. Tests like IQ tests, right, and thematic apperception tests, TAT, right, Rorschach inkblot test to determine whether or not you're an appropriate employee for my company. It's kind of strange, isn't it, to ask a person to interpret an ink blot and then you decide whether they're going to be fine at your company or not. Here's your ink blot, buddy. And they open it up and they say, it looks like a job applicant taking a hatchet to the interviewer. Should they get the job?
Yeah.
That would be my response, too. Let's have a little action in this place, damn it. Yeah, I know what you mean. But weird things like this, the people take these things seriously. Let's talk about IQ tests first off. IQ tests are, like many of these tests, the possibility for a socially valued thing being given more credence than it's worth. In an IQ test, people say, well, it's great. He scored or she scored high on the IQ test because it's a socially deemed important characteristic. And so they hire this person. Is a high IQ a good thing for a job? Depends is the answer to almost every question I ever ask you. What's my granddaughter wearing? Depends. No, that's just a bad joke. It just crossed my mind. Isn't that for older people? Really? Is it? Okay. So then it was sort of not good at all, not very nice. It does depend. It depends on the nature of the job. What happens if you get a person that scores very high on an IQ test and the test is doesn't require an IQ? A vegetable could do it. What's going to happen? You're eliminating the need for that skill, that's for sure, and you're making your applicant pool smaller. And what's going to happen to that employee? They're going to get bored, precisely. They're going to get bored to beat the drums. My older son that went to science and math, so at least he's reasonably sort of, you know, he's pretty smart, reasonably smart, I guess. He took a summer job putting together shoes for the Timberland plant that used to be here in school up at Shadow Line up there, and back in, you know, 20 years ago. And he's going to make $8 an hour, and he's going to really make a lot of money this summer, plus production bonuses. So at lunchtime, he called me and said, I hate it here. Can I come home? I said, sure, we'll have fun things to do, and I'll pay you. And basically, I paid him to stay home with me for the summer. It was real fun. And he got bored, is what it came down to. Here, you take the top of a boot, you stick it on the bottom of the boot, known as the sole, right? And then you take it and you grind off the excess rubber, and then you take that boot and you put it back on the conveyor belt, and then what do you think you do?
You have another top and a bottom.
Huh?
You have another top and a bottom? And then
there's another top and a bottom. And you take that and you bring it over and you put those together and put it back on the assembly line. What do you think you do next? Talk about boring, right? So anyway, tests like that are okay if you know how to use it. And here's how you use an IQ test. If you know it's important that a person's smart to do a job, and I don't know a job that requires a person being smart. There's a wide range of smartness amongst your professors, you may or may not have noticed, right? I notice it every day when somebody comes up with a better answer for a joke than I had for a joke. Brian Whitaker is really sharp. Sharp, sharp, sharp. So, huh? Yeah, Whitaker. Here's what he said the other day, which was so smart. I'm still talking about it. I told Jody. The secretary said, there's a package in there for you, Jerry. And I said, okay. So I went in and got it. I said, oh, it's Jody's tights. for biking. You know, she has wears tights when it's cold. She said, it's tights. And Brian says, I have an image of your wife wearing tights. And I said, well, and she wears a tutu and tights, and she does the housework when she does the housework. So you see my wife going wearing tights and a tutu, right? It was just like a little ballet skirt, right? Everybody with me?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty weird, right?
Yeah.
So there's this long pause, and Brian Whitaker says, God, that's a small world. That's smart. Really smart. Implying that somebody in his house does that too. See? It's a small world. See? He's so freaking smart. But anyway, and he's really fun to talk to. Okay, so what we have here is what's smart. I'm just saying that in college, professors don't have to be smart necessarily. What they have to do is slog through the PhD program and remember some stuff, and then don't be too mean to the students. That's the main requirements. And then research, lots of research. But here's how you use it then. Pick really smart people for jobs that you think you need really smart people in. My opinion is there aren't many jobs that require really smart people. Why? Because they have managers that are stupid and they won't let them be smart anyway. Okay. On the other hand, if you have, and they get bored and quit too, of course, as I was just saying. On the other hand, if you have five people who are applying for a job that's pretty routine and boring, and all five of them have done that job before and they know what's involved, then you can use an IQ test and take the most intelligent person out of that. The most intelligent person in that group might have an IQ of 100, which is not very high, right? But that would be the person. So IQ tests are good when there's a cohort group that all is familiar with the job. Do you understand?
What about if you were looking for, like, I don't know what they call them, but I've seen them one day, research and development for new...
See, that might be a situation where that's good, but creativity isn't necessarily smartness. So you have to be careful about that. You might try to see if you can find a test or at least past work history where this individual demonstrated a certain amount of creativity. My dad, for example, he was an artist. He's really creative, right? But he dropped out of high school in 11th grade.
What about a test that would be directed towards that?
Creativity.
That job description.
Yeah, there's books of these things, Burris Mental Measurement it's called. And they have all kinds of tests, creativity and honesty and all kinds of crap like that. Yeah, it's a book about this thick. Mental measurements, Burris Mental Measurements. So you can measure these kinds of things. But don't misuse them. Be careful about these things. Another IQ test is called the Wunderlich, Wunderlich. You know them because they use the Wunderlich to test NFL quarterbacks, apparently. Right? Are the smartest quarterbacks the best quarterbacks? Most of them. I don't know the answer. But the kids in the other class all had examples of really smart quarterbacks that were really bad. They knew some.
They're really smart in football. Yeah, they're good quarterbacks.
Yeah, I guess. But that's what the Wunderlich does. It's a power test. You got 50 questions and 10 or 12 minutes to answer as many as you can. So, anyway, if you're going to use IQ tests, just make sure you use it appropriately. I often wonder about these things. Honesty test is another example. Honesty test is another one of those socially acceptable measures that we think is important. People should be honest. Doesn't that depend on the job? A used car salesman. Right? Only driven by a little old lady, right, etc. Who used to drive it to church. Whatever.
And into ditches.
Hmm?
And into ditches.
And into ditches. Yeah, my dad. My dad's driving home one night in this Saab he had this Saab, and he came to a T intersection right here, went across the road and went about 50 feet into a farmer's field, which was like 15 feet below the level of the road. So the car went rocketing across the road, the T road, and sailed out into this field just the middle of the night and landed about 20 feet out there. So my little brother, who's a mechanic, goes up, and he's got a tow truck. So he goes up there, and then eventually the police show up and this and that. And the police look at my brother, Matt, and say, boy, your dad must have been really mad when you did that. Boy, talk about stereotyping, right? Yeah. That it's the younger person that's going to have the accident. Here's my dad flying this car through midair. He once went off the side of the road in a motorcycle in Hollywood Hills, went off the road in his BMW motorcycle, and went into the top of a tree that was growing up beside the road, and there's the motorcycle with him on it about 40 feet in the air, right, suspended by these branches that are of this tree. Yeah, it was a big tree, and it was pretty strong, apparently, because the motorcycle wasn't light. So two times off the road. Oh, and another time he borrowed a friend of ours' bike on home. We had a real long lane running down to the house. He said, let me borrow you Ned's bike. And I said, what the hell? He said, well, Zundapp. So which was from the Second World War, so my dad felt comfortable with it. So he gets on this thing, goes rocking down the road, failing to realize there wasn't much in the way of brake. Off into the woods he goes, crashing through the underbrush. He was okay, though. I hadn't thought about it. Three times that he couldn't keep the vehicle on the road. Whatever. But the tree one was definitely cool. Okay, so there, I mean, that kind of thing, he was smart, right? But in certain situations, and creative, but in certain situations, not so good. But whatever. So, all these tests, then, could be appropriate if it's the right situation. It's up to you to figure out whether this test, which might seem good to you because it's socially acceptable, people are honest, people are smart, or whatever, right, aren't necessarily good. In terms of honesty tests, they used to use what?
Polygraph,
lie detector, exactly, the polygraph. Then they came out with the, I think it was 1992 or 4, right in there. Back in the 90s, they came out with the Polygraph Protection Act, and that forbid the use of polygraphs to almost all hiring situations, except in security situations where you're guarding a store or some such. But in general, the polygraph is not allowed to be used. It is only, you know, two prongs here that measure the electrical flow across your skin, right, which is due to sweat, right? And galvanic skin response means sweat. And the more under pressure you feel when somebody says, you know, did you steal a manhole cover off the street on Walnut Street? Yes, I did. I admit it. But if I said no, right, the needle would light up because supposedly I'd be sweating there. One of my two thefts in my life is a manhole cover.
Yeah,
right. Christ, in the back of the seat of my Volkswagen, you better freaking believe it. And I got it up the front steps on my friend's porch and left it there. She'd admired it. But, you know, I just figured I needed something to do. It was this manhole cover about this big, but it had all these pieces of glass, colored glass in it to let the light down.
Oh, cool.
It was very cool.
That's really cool.
Aren't you thinking now about the hole that I left in the sidewalk and somebody might fall into it?
No.
Hopefully some kid on a bicycle.
Yeah. I took a city trash can that's in Philadelphia and put it in the hole.
Okay. Maybe catch something.
But then about 5 days later, I saw a guy walk and fall into a manhole. How old? 16.
Yeah, something like that.
Stupid, but fun. I don't know how I got onto this. Where was I on this thing? Oh, theft. Honesty test. So they got away from the polygraph, they went into the written honesty test, right? Have you ever stolen anything from a store? You have to respond, yes or no. I honestly do think you are better answering them honestly, because they know everybody's always stolen something. There might be somebody in here who's never stolen anything. The other thing I stole was colored pencils for Jody when we were just little kids. I mean, real little kids. I stole her some colored pencils once. The bad part was that it was her friend's father's stationery store. And I felt bad about it ever since then. Pomerantz's stationery store in Philadelphia. I stole colored pencils. I feel bad about it. But, so I must owe them. It was like $1.50 for this set of colored pencils, which by now would be probably interest gained would be like $230,000 on those things or something. too late to pay for them now. But the honesty test might be useful. It might not be useful. I just don't really trust them. The government, they did a big testing on this, and they said it doesn't work, that it's just too easy to cheat on it and this and that. But, of course, the company that sells it says, oh, it's the best thing since sliced bread. You just have to have one of these if you want to know how honest your employees are. But is it valid? Is it a valid predictor of future job performance? I'd say no way, because dishonest people are going to lie. Honest people are going to sort of say, yes, I did. I stole colored pencils in a manhole cover, and so you wouldn't hire them. So you're going to get just the opposite of what you thought you were going to get, sort of. You see my point. So just be careful with these things. You know, people have all these wild ideas of what a good selection tool. But I still think what Rye did, that two-day sort of on-the-job testing, was probably the best kind of test, because they got to know him, see whether they like him, whether he was prompt getting to work, you know, this and that. So all that worked pretty well, in my opinion. Don't fall for the socially acceptable measures unless you need those socially acceptable measures. What about things like, in terms of selection, things like visual tattoos? Did we talk about this already?
Yeah.
We did. Any case, what did we say? You know, ivy growing up your neck, and it goes across the front of your face, over your nose, around across the top of your head, down your bald spot in the middle of your head, and back down again. And at the end of the ivy is a skeleton hanging from a rope.
I'm pretty sure you said it was based off the job. Like, if I'm a business professional, then I can't have, you know, skulls on my arms. But if I'm a tattoo artist, I can have whatever I want, essentially.
The thing about this is that you have a generational gap here. That's what I've come to realize. I don't think tattoos are cool at all. I go along with Matt Gorin, who draws The Simpsons, you know. Matt Gorin had a strip called, a bunch of different huts he had. This was the Tattoo Hut. And the Tattoo Hut put tattoos on people. Akbar and Jeff made tattoos for people. They also had a diet hut, and various other huts. But this was the Tattoo Hut. $10 for misspelling, by the way. $10 discount for misspelling. And then their motto was, it's not self-mutilation if we help you do it. It's like that, too. So I think it's self-mutilation, but that's just me. That's my generation. What do you think my grandfather used to think about that stuff? Woo-hoo-hoo. This was the guy who wore neckties to dinner all the time. Talk about conservative. Okay, but now you guys, what do you think about tattoos? You don't care, do you? Not in the slightest. If the guy who's, you go for investment advice, if the guy has a tattoo, do you care? No. You just want to see if he can make money for you, I would assume. So it's a generational thing. And if you're going to forbid something, I would make sure that there's a reason for forbidding it, rather than your own personal biases. Do you see what I'm saying? It could be that young people that go to a bank manager that has a tattoo feels like he's more in touch with the situation or with their particular needs because he's dressed and decked out in younger paraphernalia. Empathy, yeah. That you wouldn't have if you went and talked to my grandfather with tie tacks and gold watches and all that crap old people wore in those days. All right, so just be careful. Selection is one of those things where biases can creep in very, very subtle ways. So be careful. All right, that's it for today. I'll see you. I'm going to send you the test. Work on it over the weekend. Get those bonus points. Yes, Dr. Fox, we will. We promise. You're going to get your test back after you've turned in the bonus test. This class did not, it doesn't appear that you did quite so badly. I don't know yet. I haven't graded at all. I've only graded about half of the front sheet on some. About half of the front sheet. I've graded the front sheet on half the test. What?